ESPN's Teron Davenport, talking Titans now on Robbie and Rex Road on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
All right, it's that time of the week. Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation, joining us as he does every Friday at 8 o'clock. And TD, boy, we've had a lively discussion today. Let me tell you something. I don't know if you caught any of the Stilly and Pauly show, but it was something else. But I want to, I do want to get you in on that a little bit here. Big picture to start. If you were, just grading, not going through every single thing, but if you were making a case for this front office, Rand Carthon as GM, what they've done that gives you hope that they can get this really turned around and get this to the point where this is a surging winning franchise again, what would you point to?
I would point to, although the free agent signings have not been superb, I would point to the ability to get guys to come here. I think that's important. That's something. But also, I would point to, there's not a lot, just to be honest with you. There isn't a lot. But I would point to that. I would point to the foundation being laid as far as identifying players and bringing them in. I think there have been, like this past draft class, I think that's something that they could build on. So those are the two things. But, we can't sugarcoat it. You got to be honest. It hasn't been good enough. It hasn't been good, period. So it has to be better.
Well, let me follow up with that because, obviously, Jared is, he's like confounded that anyone would not fire them today. And, Paul and I are sitting here like, I would not. I would give them another free agent and draft class. I think you bring up some interesting points about getting players to come here. So when you say drafts, you're saying like in terms of their evaluation and the way that I think the draft class is my biggest argument for them is that the last draft class, and we don't know yet with Cedric Gray, right? And Sweat's going to be a huge, either or in
he
that.
Needs to get
but
going.
Like so far, I think this draft class shows some promise. Are you talking about the evaluation process they went through in picking those guys?
Yeah, I think the process and the guys that they've gotten. I think Jarvis Brownlee Jr. is at the fifth round. Like, that's an outstanding pick. I think you look at some of the other guys, J.C. Latham, that's a piece that you're going to build around. And everybody said, oh, well, he's a first-round pick. Well, you don't always hit on first-round picks.
Exactly.
Remember, the guy that was here before had one first-round pick sign his second contract in over 5 years. So let's not just automatically assume that first-round picks are going to work out. But you look at J.C. Latham, what he's done, I think he is someone that, that was a really good pick.
You and I teamed up a little bit looking at what happened on the Quentin Johnson touchdown where Kenneth Murray was in coverage. I want to talk about the other inside linebacker. Jack Gibbons, I get questions. All of us in the media say the same thing about Jack Gibbons. Like, ultimately, he's going to get burned in coverage. We know his ceiling. Where is Jerome Baker? But you look at PFF, which you and I agree is not the end-all and be-all, and he's got great grades for these games that he's started. Coaches are raving about him. Teammates are raving about him. We know, you take that with a grain of salt. Help me explain to people why Jack Gibbons isn't all he appears to be.
I think they've done a good job of hiding him, honestly, and opposing teams have not done a good enough job of isolating and exposing him. It's interesting. I don't understand why it's happening, but if I'm an OC, I'm trying to get him matched up against a running back, a tight end. But Jack Gibbons, the reason why he's playing is because he's doing what he's being asked to do, right? He's asked to be that garbage man to clean up. And I know people want more out of Tavondre Sweat, but, he's up front occupying the blockers, and Gibbons is coming in and cleaning up. And that's really what it boils down to, and that's why he has so many tackles. And, you look at what Jerome Baker told you, right? Jack Gibbons is playing out of his mind. Now, I don't know about all of that, But I would say that he's doing what he's being asked to do, and he's not getting matched up against, you know, mismatches in coverage.
The other benefit there, that's why I brought up the Murray thing. The Chargers know Murray very well. They let him go in part because of his coverage deficits. And then he'd go after Gibbons because they were busy a couple times figuring out how to get Murray in those awkward situations.
Yeah, I tell you, the one where he got the pass interference call, that was definitely, I would say that was a concentrated effort to go at Murray. You had that receiver on the outside. He ran that slant, and it was designed to make Murray have to go around him and run with the back. And I mean, you see that happen to a lot of linebackers. That would be the one, but you are right. I mean, Murray is the guy that's ending up having to cover, and it hasn't always produced the best results. And I think if you look at Jerome Baker, like, that's something that he was a cover backer. Like, that's something that he does well, and he could give you the tackles and things that Jack Gibbons is giving you. So I think it's just one of those things where just to spin it back to Gibbons, right, from the coverage perspective, he hasn't done anything for them to say, hey, let me pull him out. And in the meantime, you got Kenneth Murray, who is kind of like the anti-beneficiary of that, because he's the one getting stuck in coverage, and that's not his forte.
So, TD, Will Levis, I think the best he's played this year, obviously just the fact that he didn't have any turnovers, slid a couple times, made some big-time throws. Also, you know, the sacks, you know, certainly some of his pocket awareness could have been better, things like that. Where do you come down on that performance, and what's the challenge with this Brian Flores defense this week in terms of just the pressures, the fake pressures, and all that stuff he's going to encounter on Sunday?
Yeah, well, I mean, and it's funny because I was talking to Jared about this, and I told him, like, hey, look, man, there's no need to throw a parade for a very efficient effort or performance. And, you know, he wants Callahan to praise him and do all this. I'm like, well, look, he identified good play, he credited him for it, period, move on. And I think that's really what happened. Levis played well, he was efficient, he did have some times like the sail concept, you know, where Josh Wiley's open, you got to throw that. That's a big time play. It puts you at the very least in field goal position instead of taking a sack, right? But you look at the other plays, like when he threw the ball to Ridley on that post, you know, he did a great job of using his shoulder and looking off that safety to get him completely out of the picture and make it an easy throw. You look at the drop shot that he threw to Ridley for the other touchdown. You look at the anticipation to Westbrook Ikhine on you know, some of those in-breaking record routes. You know, those were good. But the pocket awareness, as you said, that's an issue. That's the next step that he has to improve upon. And it has to come this week because, as you mentioned, Brian Flores, you know, they're going to simulate pressure. And it's crazy how they do it because he'll blitz Harrison Smith, you know, off the edge, right? And then he'll have him show blitz and drop back into the passing lane to get the interception. So there's all types of things that they do. You got Ivan Pace, who they blitz him, the middle linebacker. They just attack, period, and they give you so many different looks. And it's done to get you confused and hold on to the ball so that the guys up front could get home. And, you know, they have sackers, you know, especially – Jonathan Grenard. So it's a tall order. I don't know what's going to happen at right tackle, but yeah, I wouldn't want to be the quarterback in that situation. I'll tell you that much.
I've got a Levis theory. Tell me what you guys think about this. And this ties into Stillman demanding that Callahan praise him like crazy.
Yeah. You must lie, Brian.
Which he would
you
have
must lie.
Which he would have bashed him for if he did. Remember last year, Vrabel didn't gush about the 4-touchdown performance. I don't think he gushed about the comeback in Miami.
People got
either,
mad at him. People
right?
got mad
and
at
people
Vrabel.
Were mad. Hey, you didn't give him a game ball, all of that. And now Callahan, after this game, also was very measured in what he said about Levis. This is two different, very different coaches not pumping his tires up after things. I don't think that's a coincidence. I think that both of them, in knowing Levis's personality, don't think it's a healthy thing for Will Levis to hear a lot of praise and to walk around with his chest up after good performances. I don't think it's some huge conscious thing like Jared does, but I don't think it's a coincidence that we haven't heard great praise for Levis when he's done well from two very different coaches. I think they don't think that's the way to go with Will Levis.
You agree, TD?
You know, that could be the case, and it's a great point. These are two polar opposites personality-wise, and neither one of them did it. I'm curious how things happen at Kentucky. So now I got a new assignment. I want to go back and watch some Kentucky press conferences and see how, you know, his head coach there and Liam Nelson and Liam Cohen. Yeah, Liam Nelson. I'm thinking of Taken. I can't pronounce the last name, but I want to see their press conferences.
So the only thing I would say, though, is that Brian Callahan was quite complimentary, you know, going into you, right? I just think Brian Callahan just answered. I think what he said was exactly. I mean, I totally agree with his analysis, right? It was good, but it wasn't like right home great, right? Which is what. So, but you know, there may be something to what you're saying.
I'll counter that, though. I'll counter that with Callahan didn't know Levis coming in.
That's true.
Now he knows him, and maybe he's like, "Oh, wait a minute, I've got to pivot in how I handle this situation."
Yeah,
I appreciate the support.
That is a fair point. See, what a nice guy. You know, TD, I got to get you moderating Stilly and Polly at some point, man. Let me tell you, it is a freaking roller coaster ride. You and I both have had young children, you know, like trying to take them somewhere and like screaming in the car, and someone poops and someone's pukes. I mean, seriously. It was something like that earlier, man.
I was listening. It was very, very engaging. Justin McQuarrie's was a very interesting mention. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Average at best and didn't sustain.
We went way back for that.
I mean, if that's the best guy you can cite from eight drafts of wide receivers, that says it all.
You did ignore Derek Mason, but.
Derek Mason was drafted in 1997 by the Oilers.
Don't start yelling at me now. See,
my thing is, if you're going to mention him, why not mention Kendall Wright? Why not mention Kenny Britt? I know they weren't outstanding, but at least they gave you 1,000-yard seasons.
That is
true. Well,
that
it wasn't in
too.
The time. It wasn't in the time too. Period that I was looking at. I was looking at a drought of eight drafts.
Got you.
Well,
yeah.
The Stilly and Pauly debate will go on. And TD, great as always. Thank you, my friend. Enjoy the game Sunday.
See you later, bud.
I appreciate it.
Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation. We come back. We will react to some of that. And we have a lot of texts that I have ignored today. So I'm going to try to get to some of your phones, too. Robbie and Rex, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.